I am Shawnee Flannery. I'm a first-year public health student at UAlbany in the health policy concentration. Hopefully I'll be in the social work program also. I did a year of a social work program before transferring to UAlbany, and I'm hoping to do the dual degree social work public health program. My background is more in social work, and I have done some work with people who are in recovery from various kinds of drugs. So that's sort of my background in harm reduction. But yeah, I've been doing more research on it this semester.
So is that why you decided to do your presentation on harm reduction?
Yeah, it's a very big topic in Philly, where I just moved from, because they almost opened a supervised consumption facility in Philly, and it was this whole like news story, and it got approved by a federal court and then shot down by a local court because the people in the neighborhood didn't want it. So there were like all of these different levels at which it had to get approved. And what ended up being its downfall was like the community that it was supposed to be in. So it's something that's been on my mind a lot. And I've done some work and had some friends who lived in the neighborhood, Kensington in Philly, which is like the biggest open air drug market in the US. And the US also has like the worst opioid problem in the world. So it's like it's kind of a hot spot of a neighborhood for the opioid and overdose epidemic. And just being there and seeing like sort of the ripple effect of heroin use and IV drug use. Made me think about it a lot in the context of social work. And then this semester switching to public health, I wanted to learn more about that perspective.
So in doing your research for your presentation, what did you find? Maybe what was something surprising maybe?
Yeah, I was surprised to find out that the U.S. accounts for 80% of the world's opioid consumption. I always knew that we had a pretty serious problem with it, but I think our healthcare system definitely has sort of allowed it to skyrocket here, and pharmaceutical companies sort of marketing their drugs to people in a way that I think can be really predatory. And then a lot of people who start using heroin do so because they can no longer afford prescription opioids. So I think that our healthcare system is pretty responsible in creating the crisis, as well as like not doing enough to curtail it. But yeah, I was really surprised to find out that the US accounted for 80% of all the world's opioid consumption. And I guess I haven't done as much research on prescription opioids, but the link between sort of like moving from prescription opioids to heroin is really significant. And just the difference between like regulated drugs and unregulated drugs in terms of like health consequences, and just the way, like the health effects of the ways that you ingest these drugs, is really significant. So I think a big part of the heroin problem in the country, I think, could be improved by decriminalization, because then it would be regulated in the same way that prescription opioids are. And obviously prescription opioids aren't completely safe, but the fact that you know how much you're taking makes them a lot safer than heroin and like illicit fentanyl. And I think learning also about just all of these health consequences of like the stigma around drug use was a big part of kind of what I learned about in the presentation. Like having heroin as like a completely illicit drug means that people have to use it in ways that aren't very safe. And if you're like rushing to inject yourself or doing it in like an unsanitary like parking lot or like hiding spot somewhere, you're much more likely to get like a skin or soft tissue infection, which can then turn into like an open wound, which if you're living in like close quarters with other people and you might have other health problems going on, can contribute to just like community levels of infections and stuff. So there are like lots of different ways, like beyond just overdose and heroin like use, that I think the stigma around drug use really negatively affects people's health, and at like the individual and community levels.
So you're saying that the war on drugs isn't stopping people from using heroin safely?
No, definitely not. And I think it's it's what's making people use heroin unsafely. I mean, not to say that there would be no, you know, health consequences or like social consequences of drug use if there were no war on drugs, but like, I don't know if you're at all familiar with Portugal, which is completely decriminalized, like all drug use, and their overdose have gone way down. I think because like there's a safer supply, people have more resources because they're not like using in the shadows. They can like link up with services more easily without fear of getting arrested. So I think the war on drugs, like in many ways, perpetuates the health crisis. And also obviously serves this like machine of incarceration in the United States. But
so something that you brought up as a solution, sort of opposing the war on drugs, the criminalization, was these supervised use facilities. Is that?
Yeah. So those are really cool. And they have been shown pretty much across the board. There's not that much data on them, but they seem to dramatically reduce like HIV and hepatitis C infection rates in the communities that they're in. And they also reduce the amount of overdoses in the communities that they're in. So there's one in Vancouver that reported a 35% reduction in mortality from overdoses within 500 meters of the facility. And like you see it like pretty much across the board at all of these facilities across the world. I think there's 90 something in the world, and there are overdoses that happen at them, especially in places where heroin isn't regulated because people don't know how much they're injecting at one time. But the overdoses are like, I haven't heard about any fatal overdoses at any supervised consumption facilities. And not all overdoses are fatal if they're just out in the community anyway, but the rate is much higher than none.
Because if it happens and they can inject Narcan or...
Yeah. So Narcan is like an amazing drug. And there are programs like nationwide, I'm sure you've like heard about them, that make Narcan more accessible to people. And like when I lived in Philly, I just kind of kept Narcan in my bag and I never reversed anybody because I never saw anybody overdosing. But there are kind of other like measures that people can take, I think, to sort of take like harm reduction in their own hands. But it is a problem that it's like not everybody knows that you can just go to the pharmacy and pick up Narcan. I'm not sure if that's a thing in the capital region, but I know in Philly anybody can just go get Narcan for free, but not everybody knows that. And not everybody knows that like Narcan even exists. So yeah, it's, I think that United States policy is very far behind the science on drug use, especially IV drug use. But yeah, consumption facilities are really cool because they not only decrease the rates of like death and overdose, but they also have all these other health effects. Like there are ways for people who aren't already linked up with services to feel sort of more welcomed into the sort of social services and healthcare services. So there's like, because there's so much stigma around drug use, a lot of the time people who need help don't feel comfortable seeking it out. And a supervised consumption facility as a resource that provides care regardless of like status as an IV drug user becomes a way for people to receive services, and they might decide to go into treatment or they might not. But the facility in Vancouver that I looked at had 46% of their participants over the course of, I think, 4 years, decide to go into treatment at some point through a referral from the supervised consumption facility. Like I said, like IV drug use can lead to all these other health conditions like HIV, and like you might have like big wounds from a skin infection or something, and they might also have like a doctor on site who can treat those wounds and then reduce the risk of those infections being passed on to other people. So there's, yeah, I think there's a big, it's a very promising intervention if we just kind of get the policy behind it.
And I remember something that came up in your presentation that you just mentioned again was that there's also a stigma around it. I remember working in a pharmacy, there's policies in New York State that people are allowed to do needle exchanges for free. And it was always very clear that the people in the pharmacy didn't approve of that personally, but they did it because it was the law. But so even health professionals can have stigma when it comes to drug use. And like you mentioned at the beginning, a lot of, with the U.S. being 80% of opioids in general, and a lot of that is coming from sort of these high-level big pharma policies to sort of push these and increase sales. So it seems like a lot of these users in the U.S. are a product of sort of this desire to increase opioid sales from big pharma. So it seems like more of what you're saying, we shouldn't be punishing these people that got sort of caught up in the system. We should be trying to make sure that if they do have this habit, that they're doing it as safely as possible and they're being referred to the proper care and services.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, I don't know, coming from a social work background, I think that's a more effective way of engaging with people in general. But it's just so, I think, like, not the cultural norm in at least the communities that I've been in the United States. Really, I don't know, I just think the stigma is like a big barrier. And I wonder, like, so you said that the pharmacists at the pharmacy that you worked at would provide like the needle exchange services, but they weren't happy about it. Like, I'm wondering, do you think that that will change over time as they get more use to the needle exchange? Or do you think that it's something where the policy could be like reversed? Like, what are your thoughts on that? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I guess with time probably will become more normalized. And a lot of my friends are pharmacists. And I think that when it comes to health professionals, they're usually convinced by evidence. And I think that if there was more information available on how the program is helping people and preventing preventing HIV or other communicable diseases, I think that that would convince them that this is helping people.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that was something that kind of came up for me in my presentation too, was that it feels like almost like a cycle of like, okay, so you need the data in order to inform the policy, which informs people's opinions, but then like you can't get the data without the policies enabling the services in the first place. So it's like at some point someone needs to just be like, okay, no, we're doing this. But yeah, definitely, I think that if people who use drugs were able to receive the services that they need in terms of like housing programs and ending mass incarceration, which is a huge risk factor for use of IV drugs. Like there are these huge societal problems that need to be addressed sort of alongside the issue of IV drug use. But I think that if those issues could be addressed and people could really be living like the fulfilling lives that they deserve outside of these like systems of oppression, then we would have completely different ideas about why people use drugs and who uses drugs. And I think that the war on drugs now kind of serves to allow people to really think of people who use drugs as like other than they are, which perpetuates all of these problems of like isolation from services, people not seeking out help, the psychological factors that put people at risk for using drugs. It's like all wrapped up in this bigger system of just like, we don't let people live the lives that they want to live. And it kind of creates all these problems that we're now seeing really play out.
Yeah. That our common approach is combative instead of accepting and assisting.
Yeah, definitely. And just sort of expecting people to conform by like going into like even if it's like drug court, it's still like, okay, so it's like mandated the way that I'm supposed to like spend my day. Like, it's like there's one right way to do everything, which is kind of, I think, a foundational aspect of like American culture and society. So it's hard to imagine how that could change, but I do think it needs to change if we want this crisis to really improve at all.